Spiritual life is basically about looking inside yourself and transforming yourself. And to start doing that, it requires a kind of accident. Sometimes people get very, very sick. They might even get something where they're supposed to die, and this is such a shock to the system, they make a profound change. They lose their job. They lose their life partner. Something fairly major gives the whole organism such a big shake-up, and then people go into such a big kind of self-inquiry that then they make a decision, okay, I'm going to find some different possibility for my life, because as I'm living now, it doesn't seem to be working. I'm not really happy, and I needed this shock, because now I got this shock, I see that I have to do something. So some kind of very negative situation might end up being a very positive situation. And I could even take this idea to a bigger scale and say maybe humanity needs what's going on now. Maybe it needs a whole planetary collapse in order to wake up humanity to the fact that we're living on a limited planet with limited resources. And we can't just go out and shoot 200 rhinoceros because we just feel like it. I've seen pictures from Africa 100 years ago where big game hunters from Europe, where they'd come to Africa and they'd go out on safari, and at the end of the day there would be elephants and rhinos and lions just lying on the ground like rabbits, because it was fun. You know, it was just fun. They did it for fun. They didn't need to do it. It was just fun. And it came out of an idea that there was an unlimited supply of all these animals. Because anyway, 100 years ago, there was quite a lot of them still running around. But now we know that all those animals are at risk. And it could be that quite quickly, they'll only be hanging out in zoos. You know? So humanity hasn't yet woken up to the fact that we're doing something where the human beings could still be left hanging out in zoos. So when that reality gradually would come through to more people, there would maybe be a big enough shock that then something would happen. You know? So I guess I'm saying negative situations are not necessarily negative in a bigger picture. There is a kind of conformity, which is not written up by the government as a rule. It's in the society somehow that, you know, if you want to get invited to my party, then there's certain ways you have to behave, there's certain ways you have to dress, there's certain things you have to say and do, which gradually, without it being really explicit, is a kind of programming. And this programming is not really supporting individual, it's supporting some kind of conformity in the society. Whereas in a country like India, I just love the characters. Everywhere you go, almost everybody you meet is a crazy kind of character who you have to then really be present to relate to, because you don't know how to relate to them even, because they don't fit any particular patterns.
Most of our suffering has to do with trying to find security. And what seems to happen is, though we are connected and we know we're dependent on countless creatures for every breath and every moment of being alive, there's also a feeling of being a separate and independent being. And as a separate independent being, we feel hurt sometimes. And feeling hurt, there's naturally a contraction. There's also very easily fear. And in that contracted and fearful state, it's very difficult to feel anything else. And then our alarm state, our alarm system, starts to heighten. And from there, it's difficult to feel intuition. It's difficult to feel that there's anything else in that small mind. It's impossible, really, to feel that there could be big mind. When there's been trauma, so there's been an overwhelming experience where I didn't have a sense of support. There was a fragmentation. And I'm stuck in my alarmed state, feeling isolated, which then starts to feel there's a sense of lack, which is true, because I'm not feeling the connectivity that's also here. I've lost track of the fact of connection. I feel a sense of lack, but I start to take that personally. I feel it's a lack in me or in the world fundamentally. And so instead of feeling this is problematic, and maybe it's not true, that there's fundamentally lack, maybe fundamentally the feeling of lack is a move, would be a movement towards connection, it becomes an isolation, so I'm not in touch with the world anymore. I'm only in touch with my reactivity. And in my reactivity, my alarm state, I have my ideas, my judgments, my fear. I don't have reality. When we're not able to be in touch with reality, even in a simple sense, we are easily led by people who don't have our best interests in mind. And so it's convenient towards profit, so-called profit, towards a few people making lots of money off of other people's work and suffering. It's more convenient if we become more and more mechanical, more and more like a factory. It's inconvenient to really belong. It's inconvenient to be alive. It's inconvenient to let things unfold organically. And our valuing of convenience as a status symbol, and then becoming so accustomed to convenience that even our bodies aren't sure we can handle a cold shower anymore, or if it's too hot or too cold, or we can't get exactly the right food even if it's out of season. And so we're not accustomed to, and it feels uncomfortable, and that triggers the alarm. And so we're easily kept in a, or we can say, we easily stay in a kind of zombie state, let's say, let's be extreme. Everybody else is, etc. And we're so alarmed that we can't easily find the willingness to take a risk of, wait a second, what am I? What is life? Sometimes when we're not able or willing to be inspired through wonder, like wow, and the weirdness of life, then we're waiting for the breakdown to give us a chance to feel that we're alive and that we don't know, and that maybe the heart could live through our life. It's helpful for many people to do two things, two streams. And one is starting to get to know that I have a body and it feels like this. Not my ideas about it, not my image of it, not my memory of it, but weight, lightness, warmth, coolness, texture, movement, etc. And for some people that comes easily. For some people they say, well, I can't tell if it's my idea of my foot or if it's a feeling of the foot. And so it's, I wouldn't say that there's one sort of method or avenue that is for all people, but in general, feeling the body more often for more people is a good and simple and accessible way. So for example, I find myself thinking in a judgmental way, there's self-hatred or blame, and then just feeling that in the body for a moment. And then maybe feeling something else in the body is important. Otherwise, we get caught up again in the alarm system. But if I feel, okay, there's also the sky, okay, blue or gray, how does that feel in the body as I see that? We could even remember a time that we felt good, and through the memory, feel that in the body as a good starting point. Then meditation itself is, there's a deepening that is natural. It's a subtle kind of magnetism and a subtle, deeply natural unfolding that as we bring a combination of the stillness, relative stillness, it doesn't mean necessarily someone has to be absolutely still, but relative quiet with some kind of juiciness. So what felt good also, not only what feels bad. That is a natural key unlocking by itself. So that's one kind of stream. So coming inside ourselves, we can start to feel that we still are connected, that we do feel each other, not only the pain, but also the kind of glory and simplicity, and that that feels like a more livable, more sustainable way.
When the chips all fall, you find it all boils down to you, me, you, me. If it is so, then that's where we have to begin. If we want to make any change, whether it's personal or societal or universal, you have to start here. So to start here, we have to figure out, by asking questions, who really am I? What is this? Is this name I have, this body I have? What does this all mean? Why was I born? What is the purpose to this life that I am right now in? So these questions have to be answered. And if you ask these questions, that means you are looking out for the answers. And the answers will come if you are sincere. The answers will come. And so this process of self-inquiry, when you start dealing with that, it's not just an intellectual search. It begins with an intellectual search, but the second step of it is in applying it to your life, applying it to, I have to now, knowing that this is the truth, I have to conform to the truth by behaving this way. Conforming to the truth is very important. It does make you a much more balanced person, much more integrated person.
I think as I started to do what I call inner work, and meditation was part of this inner work, I had experiences. I had suddenly spontaneous, energetic phenomena happening. And in these phenomena, I felt very different from my normal daily way of feeling. Maybe sometimes they were quite shocking. And sometimes they were so beautiful that they made me, in a way, want more of that, not quite understanding what that was. And so then I would persevere with whatever it would be, whatever my investigation was, whatever technique I was using at the time. And then maybe I had more of those lovely experiences. So I was slowly beginning to know myself in a new way. I remember once, for example, I was sitting in an ashram in India having breakfast, and suddenly looking around, I noticed so many insects. It was like a shock. Wow, there are so many insects. And then I thought, well, why do I suddenly notice that? And then I realized, because something has changed inside me. I'd become much more peaceful, I'd become much more present, and because of the presence and the sensitivity, I could see these insects. Before, for many years of my life, I'd been kind of running through life in a very insensitive way, very unpresent, busy thinking inside myself, no possibility to look around and smell and feel what was going on around me. So I simply hadn't noticed the insects. It's like they didn't exist. In a way, moments like I just described about the insects were a way that I could see that something had happened inside me, or was happening inside me. Because this was a gradual process over many years. It wasn't a particularly sudden, it was a gradual, some sort of gradual changing. There came at one point in my life something you could say was a bit sudden, and in a way that was the most dramatic transformation that happened to me. That was created in relationship to my spiritual teacher, who had the energetic power to kind of be a catalyst for some kind of energetic phenomena happening inside of me, which happened fairly suddenly. And out of this sudden happening, there was a profound change inside me. And this is actually called enlightenment, although this word enlightenment doesn't really, it's not the right word, and it doesn't have really any meaning. And people have very different ideas anyway about what this word enlightenment means. But anyway, there's a sense of something profound happening in this word. And what actually happens is that you somehow lose very dramatically many of the conditionings, many of the ideas, many of the robotic behaviors and thoughts. You suddenly lose all that. And then you're left with something much more simple, much more quiet. And actually what you're left with is a lot like a kind of 2-year-old child who is very conscious. Unfortunately, 2-year-old children are not so conscious, but the way they live is very has a very profound sense about it, because they tend to be very spontaneous. They tend to be very present, and they have a kind of peace about them, a kind of originality, you could say, about them. And it's possible as an adult to go through a process over some years which will suddenly release back this kind of 2-year-old nature, which we all know inside us, but we've kind of lost contact to it. And of course, when it happens in somebody who's much, much older, there is a kind of conscious intelligence on top of this spontaneity and present behavior that you can find in a 2-year-old. And what I discovered from that was that then there's a complete change in one's perception of life. It's like the whole perception of life changes. And this is now, you could say, fairly rare, but there's no reason why it would need to be so rare.
Any society, to be healthy and happy as a whole society, we need different inputs. We have teachers to teach. You have doctors to take care of the health. You got social workers. You got many ways. Everybody has to contribute. Politicians also needed to organize the society. But one thing you forget, these external alone will not help. We need also enlightened people who experience inner bliss always in every situation. Their words, their advice is extremely needed. The Indian society, generally the people, the expectation, okay, we need to get help from all this, but more than everything else, we need people who set values, who are living their values, who are example for us, who are not greedy, who are very much outgoing. And their presence, their very life, is essential for the society's well-being. And I challenge some of the younger Jesuits. We are supposed to be leading people on the spiritual side. To awaken the spiritual consciousness, who you are, that your happiness inside, how you get into it. This is what we have to guide people. Politicians are not doing their job, so you go out to do it. Teachers are not teaching properly, so you start school, college, you teach. Medical side, sisters are running, helping you. But who will do this job? If you don't do it, who will do it? We need to have the balance of all. So it's very important. So in Indian society, basically spiritually oriented, they say you gurus, you sadhus, yogis, you don't have to come into social line. You don't have to do social work. You be there meditating, you be close to God, you be a good example. When the world is running after material things and greedy, you want to see someone who is not greedy. When there is so much violence going on, I want to see somebody who is peaceful. There's so much of depressed and wants someone who is happy. You need the model, and their very life is teaching, plus their teaching also is important. Who can show us the way, who can help us understand the scriptures, because we don't understand easily the scriptures, because the world is running one direction. So we see that so much suffering in the world. Everywhere you see suffering, 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 death. Very few people seem to be happy. Maybe they pretend actually they are not happy fully. So we had great Buddha already 600 years before Christ, who tried to analyze what is the cause of suffering. We know the answer in general. Suffering is caused by desires, demands, expectations, attachments. And if we can get rid of them, any situation we are happy. First, we have to distinguish between pain and suffering. Pain is discomfort of the body or the emotions. It can be caused by others, it can be caused by one's own stupidity, it can be caused by nature. But this pain is of two types. One is avoidable pain, other one is non-avoidable pain. Avoidable pain, you can try to do something, you need the courage to do. And non-avoidable, you have to accept. Because we are not in control of everything. We are not the boss. We are not the general manager of the universe. There are so many things we have to accept. Sickness, old age, death. If we resist, then you end up in suffering. So once people know this one, then there is no more suffering. You can have any amount of pain, any amount of discomfort of body or mind, but you are always happy. So this is something we need to always keep in mind. Whenever there is any suffering, it means we are attached to something which we need to give up. We are not realistic. We are not taking life in a realistic way. We need to analyze ourselves and to correct our own attachments, our demands, then we keep growing, 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 growing. Basically, the problem in the world is so much violence, so much suffering, sickness, is because we are not aware of our own inner worth. We have souls developed so low self-esteem and trying to cover up with external things, doing or having many things. We go into ourselves to the being, who am I, and realize we are all divine,